Good afternoon. Speaking of unforgettable incidents as we were last week, here's one from the Berkshires. Never was the old saying, what you don't know won't hurt you, better illustrated than in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, on a certain Saturday night in pre-Prohibition days. It was a foggy Saturday night. And among the late shoppers hurrying home with their Sunday dinners were Mr. and Mrs. Patrick J. McCarty. Mrs. McCarty held onto a basket of vegetables with one hand and onto Pat with the other. Under her arm, instead of over her head, she carried a big umbrella. Pat had quite a load, too. A dozen bottles of beer in a paper bag and 10 pounds of rib roast loosely done up in a brown paper. As they felt their uncertain way through the fog and drizzle, they came suddenly to what they thought was Henry Piper's big dog Prince, right in the middle of the sidewalk. Mr. McCarty thought the dog looked bigger than the usual, but as things frequently do get bigger and fuzzier on foggy Saturday nights, he said affably, "Hello, Princey old boy. How's the old doggy-woggy tonight?" The huge, tawny animal, sitting on its haunches, licking its chops and sniffing at the fresh meat Pat was lugging, gave a low growl, and swinging an enormous paw in Pat's direction, missed him by a millionth of an inch. That was too much for Mrs. McCarty. Believing that even dogs should have good manners, she put down her basket, walked up to the beast and scolded, "You're a bad dog, Prince. Now get out of me way. Go on home, do you hear? Go on home." When the animal bared his long, white teeth and gave no sign of departing, Mrs. McCarty lifted her umbrella and smacked the critter right between his big furry ears. With a surprised yelp, the animal leaped over the hedge and disappeared into the darkness. The next morning, when Mrs. McCarty opened her Sunday newspaper, she couldn't believe her eyes. Across the front page in big black headlines were these words, "Two big lions escaped from circus. Pittsfield citizens have narrow escapes. Enraged beast kill one horse, injure others. Hundreds flee as lions roam streets." Yes, sir, two big lions did escape in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, from the Bostock Animal Show. And for several hours, that section of Berkshire County was in an uproar. The story was carried by the Boston papers the following Monday, but the general public didn't know that one of the lions attacked and almost killed her keeper on Saturday afternoon. Here's what happened. The F.C. Bostock Animal Show had arrived in Pittsfield to play a week's engagement at the Academy of Music before moving on to Fitchburg. Big crowds had packed the auditorium every day, and at the Saturday matinee, there was a packed house, mostly women and children. The youngsters clung to their mothers' hands as they watched Madame Barlow step courageously into the big cage where four enormous lions paced back and forth. One of them, named Victoria, kept snarling and whining. Victoria weighed about 600 pounds. And there was a reason for her bad disposition. She was with young, and as all wild animals are dangerous at such a time, the attendants kept a sharp eye on her. Now, when it came time for the lions to climb the ladder and walk the tightrope, which was really a plank suspended in midair, the other three lions went through their routine okay, but Victoria refused to budge. She snarled, showed her wicked teeth, and when Madame Barlow approached her, she crouched as if ready to spring, and Mrs. Barlow finally had to fire her pistol to scare the beast into doing her stuff. But no amount of coaxing or threatening would get Victoria across the tightrope that afternoon. And when the show was over, Madame Barlow called William Crawford, one of the trainers, and said, "Bill, I think it's about time that Victoria was confined to her cage. She was tricky this afternoon and very ugly." Well, about an hour later, when Crawford stepped into the cage to toss chunks of horse meat to the lions, Victoria was still snarling. And the moment he turned his back, she sprang for him. Crawford jumped, but one of the lion's long claws caught him in the chin and ripped it wide open. As he was knocked headlong against the bars, he felt a stinging pain in his shoulder. Luckily, there was a pike pole handy, and with it, Crawford forced the enraged beast back into her corner and tripped the gate. When it clanged down, the trainer, bleeding badly from a dozen cuts, staggered backstage and collapsed. Three physicians responded to a call for help, and the injured man was removed to a doctor's office where it was discovered his shoulder and arm had been badly lacerated. To prevent blood poisoning, the wounds were cauterized. Several stitches were taken in his chin, his arm was put in a sling, and he returned to the academy for the evening performance. Calling the stagehands together, Crawford said, "Boys, you'll have to watch Victoria tonight every second. She's tasted blood, and there's no telling what she may do. If anything happens, don't shoot unless you have to. She's a valuable animal, and we don't want to lose her or the cubs either. Full-grown lions at that time were bringing between $1,500 and $2,000, and lion kittens were worth $500 apiece. The stagehands did watch Victoria every minute, but after the show was over and the animals had been paired off and put into smaller cages to travel in, somebody was very callous indeed. Usually, all the theatrical equipment and scenery was hoisted from truck wagons in the courtyard back of the academy to the third-floor stage entrance by Block and Tickle. But when the Bostock show arrived, the manager of the academy had a hunch or something, and he forbid the stagehands to hoist the animals in what he called those old flimsy packing cases. Actually, they were wooden cages or boxes with iron bars at each end. And with two animals to a cage, the cases weighed about 1,300 pounds apiece. So, when the show moved in, the animal cages were lugged up the fire escape and onto the stage instead of being hauled up by ropes. Well, when it began to rain that Saturday night, it looked like too much of a job to move the animals down three flights of fire escapes. So a crew of carpenters put up a big heavy beam that projected out from the upper story stage entrance, and a Block and Tickle was hung so the cages could be lowered quickly onto the express wagons below. About 11 o'clock that night, after the scenery, baggage, and props had been let down, the cages were lowered. After supervising the landing of his panthers, jaguars, and a big black Nubian lion, Signor Arnaldo started down the fire escape just as the cage containing Victoria and another lioness named Sappho was pushed toward the open stage door to be lowered. Looking down into the dimly lighted courtyard, Arnaldo saw two express wagons draw up to the loading platform. The biggest team had two horses, the smaller wagon only one. A crowd of 30 or 40 bystanders stood with upturned faces, watching the cage containing Sappho and Victoria as it swung out from the third-story stage door and started slowly toward the ground. When it was two-thirds of the way down, the rope snapped. The cage crashed to the concrete, the top flew off, the sides caved in, and both lions leaped into the crowd. According to eyewitnesses stationed safely above the lions, no human beings ever moved faster than those folks. The early morning edition of the Berkshire Eagle said, "As some of those spectators haven't been seen since Saturday night, it's presumed they're still running." Well, for a second or two, both lions stood as if dazed. Then Victoria rose to her full height, just as you've seen lions pictured on the circus posters, and sprang for the horse on the small express wagon. With a roar that could be heard for blocks, and you can bet it chilled the blood of all who heard it, the enraged lioness sank her teeth in the horse's throat, and with a giant paw over the animal's back, pulled it to the ground. At the same instant, Sappho leaped for the other horses, harnessed to the big express wagon. Snorting and thrashing, they tried to get away from their harness and the wreckage of the splintered cage. But Sappho had a death grip on the nigh horse, and they couldn't get loose. Hoping to frighten the lions away from the horses, Signor Arnaldo and J. Warren Chase dashed down the fire escape, discharging revolvers. But the lions paid no attention. Then Arnaldo ran into the courtyard and fired at Victoria point blank. He either missed or the bullets glanced off, and it was several minutes before she left the mangled horses and crawled underneath the express wagons. Sappho, meanwhile, ambled out of the courtyard and onto Cottage Row, while, like the big dog that many thought she was, she trotted down the sidewalk, sniffing of this and that as she padded along. If one is to believe all the stories about that exciting Saturday night, Sappho was seen on every street and in every backyard in Pittsfield. The most surprising part of the whole affair is that instead of staying indoors, folks got up, dressed, and ran out to chase the lions. In vain did police, firemen, and circus attendants warn them of what might happen if the beasts were cornered. They paid no attention. Armed with sticks, brooms, and guns, they patrolled the dark, foggy streets, prodding the thickets and poking all the likely places where a lion could hide. Back in the courtyard, where Victoria was still under the wagon, Signor Arnaldo crept forward with his gun. When a few feet from the lioness, he aimed and fired several times. The lioness came out, leaped over the horses, ran a short distance, and dropped. Arnaldo then started to find Sappho. A local reporter, learning that his boss, editor William J. Oatman, had gone to a nearby diner for his midnight cup of coffee, phoned the lunch cart to warn Mr. Oatman not to leave, because a lion was sitting outside on the steps. Mr. Oatman, however, had already left, and he reached the office while the reporter was still telephoning. "Oh," he said, "that's what I brushed by a few minutes ago. I thought it was a big shaggy dog." The McCartys thought so, too. Now, the lioness Sappho caused the most excitement when she appeared from the shadows of Cottage Row and headed for the North Street Bridge. There she stopped, sniffed a few times, trotted across the bridge toward the central garage, and disappeared behind a vine-covered lattice. It was dark as pitch back there, and the crowd closing in a circle didn't know just where she was hiding. Every so often, some prankster would pitch a stone into the bushes, and with screams and yells, men, women, and children went tumbling all over each other to get out of the way. Then they'd close in again, ready with such suggestions as building a big fire, ringing the church bells, or sending for the militia. Fortunately, Henry Jeffers, the night man at the garage, came along and opened the side door. Apparently, Sappho liked the smell of tires and gasoline, for she ambled in. And when the door closed behind her, the crowd gave a great shout. Now all they had to do was capture the lion and take her back to the train. So the stagehands fetched a big cage, placed it against the sliding... Sappho, seeing her reflection in the door of a highly polished touring car, took a swipe at it with her paw, and then sank her teeth in a rear tire. It exploded with a bang, and the terrified beast, like a cat in a fit, leaped up the sides of the garage and over the cars, turning the place into a shambles. When she finally quieted down, Arnaldo spoke to her as you'd speak to a kitten. And doggone if she didn't trot right up to him. He patted her throbbing head and led her by the ear to the cage, and in she went, glad to be back in familiar surroundings. All that night, Sappho wailed and moaned for her missing companion, Victoria, her pitiful cries sending shivers down the spines of all who heard them. Meantime, the dead lion was skinned, and the hide was sold to a taxidermist. It would have brought more than $75 had it not been mutilated by souvenir hunters, who also took teeth and claws as mementos of that wild night. Many tall tales have been told about the Pittsfield lion escape, and I'm wondering if any of you Berkshire listeners can verify them. Is it true that when Doctors Roberts and Millett removed the lion cubs from their dead mother, they were found to be alive, were brought up on milk bottles, and later became favorite attractions at an upstate zoo? And what about the colored chap who is alleged to have broken the all-time record in the Berkshires for high jumps? When the lion was breathing down the back of his neck, did he really clear that 9-foot fence? I'd like very much to locate some of the gentlemen who took refuge in that lunch cut. And if anyone has a tooth or a nail from those wild animals, I'd like to photograph it. And what about the details, if any, what other details, if any, can you Berkshire listeners add to this story of lions in the streets of Pittsfield?